Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Glad you could join us today. We've got a conversation with Blake Tatum, the Vice President of U.S. Commercial of Acute Care and Monitoring at Medtronic. I'll talk to him a little later in the podcast about that business, how it's using technology and collaboration to build out its business. Before that, Chris Newmark and I will tackle this week's Newmarkers Newsmakers. And I want to invite you all to hang out with Chris and me and Kayleen Brown at Device Talks Minnesota. That's happening on May 4th. We have a great lineup of conversations, a lot of technical conversations, but four big keynotes, kicking it off with Heather Knight, the Chief Commercial Officer at Solventum. Then we'll have Mike Blue of Histosonics, followed by the legendary Manny Villafana. I'll talk with him about his work in leadership in the medtech space. And finally, I'm really looking forward to my conversation with Lisa Ehrenhardt of Abbott. That's just an amazing company going in many new and fascinating directions, and I can't wait to unpack that all with her. So please make sure you check out the agenda. Register, go to minnesota.devicetalks.com, and when you register, use the code DTW25 to save 25% off the cost of registration. Now let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
How are you, sir?
Doing all right, Tom. Doing all right.
I'm dragging, Chris. I'm dragging. I got a late flight last night. Here's a tip for everybody out there traveling. I didn't have any major TSA line problems, but I think if you're taking one of the last flights of the night, count on being delayed for an hour or more, because I think the cumulative delays of the day will finally catch up with you at the end. So it was one of those 8:59 flights that actually 8:33 flights that left at like 10:19 flights. So, which I got to watch the whole Purdue Texas game. So
nice. There you go.
So
you
got that airport. So Chili's watching that, and made my little airport travel buddies, you know, talking about the game with them. So it was a nice time, but I didn't like getting home at 2:30 in the morning.
Do you a little plate of Southwest egg rolls at Chili's?
I went with the beef, the sliced beef with the flour tortilla thing. I forget what they call that, but it was nice. It was totally respectable. You know, it was a good time. Yeah,
good times. That's fantastic. When you were in the TSA line, did you have an ICE agent come up and give you a bottle of water? I heard they were giving out bottles of water.
Too bad. No, but everyone was very nice. And this was West Palm Beach Airport. It was very good. And Logan was fine. I went to Logan 2 hours early, anticipating just in case, and there was no problem whatsoever. So I just got to hang around this terminal for an extra hour and a half because I was anticipating a problem that didn't exist.
I've had a lot of bad luck at Logan over the years, including having coming back for Device Talks Boston 1 year. I'm like, I see my plane and, you know, I have a nice little place I can get a breakfast burrito and watch the plane out the window. And I'm like, why are they dragging my plane away? And it turned out it had been struck by lightning.
Yeah, that's a new one.
It's like the terminal.
In Logan's defense, you've also been in a plane that got struck a flock of geese too, right?
Yes. That was years ago. But
you don't have the best plane luck when it comes.
Yes, I know that when a goose gets sucked into an airplane engine, it sounds like a shoe in a clothing dryer. It's not a sound
that's
you want to hear
funny
on an airplane.
I'm not laughing at that. No. Good description, though. Very vivid.
Yes. You don't want to be on a flight where afterwards, I literally saw FAA people standing outside with clipboards, looking in the engine, no, that's not good.
Anywho, well, that's the travel segment of Device Talks Weekly Podcast.
There we go.
Now let's get into the news.
You know, you had this another fun airplane time. You know, you got in early in the morning, but Lisa, we're talking on Friday morning, and you do your I saw you were talking on LinkedIn, it's the Salemi family pizza night again tonight. You get some pizza going.
You know, my wife made plans with her friends tonight, so she's going out to eat. So we're moving pizza night to tomorrow. Yes.
Okay.
We talked it through. We're all fine. We're good with it. But yeah, it has disrupted the flow. She didn't choose the night, but pizza night will be one night, one more night. So it gives me something to look forward to tomorrow after the after the Purdue game. So
here you go. We got the weekend, got the pizza night. Awesome. Yeah. We'll jump now into the new markers, newsmakers. So like let's especially because we have a tired Tom Salemi here. So we'll Tom, wake up, Tom, wake up. All right, let's get going.
I'm up. Go. Okay. Number five.
Number five on the list. Yours truly. I posted a story on Mass Device this week about 10 surgical robotics companies you need to know. And it's just kind of like a roundup, like talking about like the surgical robotics companies that especially stood out in Mass Device's surgical robotics special report. So I encourage you to just check out that article. You can get a little snapshot of where things are right now in the surgical robotics space. And then I encourage you, like, download a free surgical robotics report, which has like profiles of like 73 companies in it, some deep feature stories about, you know, Medtronic, Intuitive, just a really good publication on, what's going on right now, like what's the state of affairs in this like extremely exciting, you know, space in med tech.
Absolutely. And looking at the list, there are actually a couple of names that surprised me that are on the list. So folks should check that out. And as I told you on the staff call yesterday, I was down visiting a friend of Device Talks, and the friend of Device Talks said the report is great. And they downloaded and passed it and sent the link to all their colleagues and said, you got to read this. It's really good. So
that's
well
fantastic.
Done.
Yeah. That's great to hear.
Providing a service to the medtech industry, as always. No,
I think that's the best thing, just to know that like that's the thing that's rewarding the most when I hear that, you know, the work we're doing is really informing people across the industry and helping to spur innovation. That's the best. That's what makes me enjoy this job and live the dream pretty much.
Yeah. One of my favorite vivid moments of journalism was I had written a story about Wright Medical for In Vivo magazine. This was probably like 2007 or 2008. And I was on a flight sitting in the aisle seat, and the woman on the other aisle seat was reading that magazine and was reading my article, like as I was sitting there. So it was kind of cool to see, like, wow, someone actually reads these things and they enjoy it. And she read the whole thing, and it was
that's
very
fantastic.
Gratifying. No, I did not go awesome. Like, do you know who I am? I'm Tom.
Do you know who I am? You're just peeking over the seat. Like, is she reading the whole article? She read the whole article.
She'd probably roll up the magazine and beat me with it. Like, go away.
You're
stop
like, hey,
watching
you're not,
me read,
you're not
weirdo.
Done with it yet. You're not done with it. You keep on. You keep... Oh no, she put the magazine away. Oh no. Yeah. Devastation.
But we do like to know that our work is appreciated. And the robot Absolutely. Report was definitely appreciated. So folks can we'll provide the link again in the show notes so folks can download
Fantastic.
That. Oh, then you just go to massdevice.com too and find it. I'm sure it's right there front and center.
Absolutely.
Or unless you want to say seven or eight hyphens again like you did last week.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to sound like somebody's great grandma sharing a master like a web address like
www.com.
Yeah, all right. Number four on the list is from senior editor Sean Hooley. It's that Abbott closed its $21 billion acquisition of Exact Sciences, best known for its Cologuard tests. But this deal, which we've talked about it before, like greatly, it's a big boost for Abbott's diabetes business, and I'm sorry, a big boost for Abbott's diagnostics business, and it's going to be exciting to see where that goes. And, and also like their medical devices business. I mean, everything from Freestyle Libres to, cardiac implants has been just doing really great too. And if people want to find out more about where that's going, you can come to the McNamara Alumni Center on May 4th for what's that event they're doing over there where Lisa Earnhardt's?
Device Talks Minnesota, and Lisa Earnhardt of Abbott will be our closing keynote conversation. I'll talk to her. Exact Sciences doesn't fall under her purview, but the medical group is obviously doing a lot of exciting things, and I'm sure we'll talk about sort of the patient-focused and customer-focused direction that Abbott's going, and talk about its partnerships with other medtech companies. They're really, I think, weaving quite the tapestry in the medtech industry, so anxious to talk to Lisa about that. Folks can certainly join us there. We'd love to see you.
Fantastic. Number three on the list, we've got Sean's really been on top of coverage about the aftermath of a Stryker gang being hit with a Iran-backed cyber attack, and his latest story that we just had on Mass Device yesterday was him jumping on reports from Bloomberg and Reuters that Stryker's now saying they've confirmed they were ramping up their manufacturing after restoring systems that had been affected in the attack. But I suspect, I mean, this Iran war continues to drag on. We're going to see more of these type of things happen to med tech companies and companies in general. So we'll keep on stay on the lookout on what's going on. I know the SEC in recent years has said the companies need to start reporting cyber attacks in their SEC filings. So we'll be keeping an eye on those SEC filings to see if anything else happens.
Yeah, folks out there are a bit chilled by the fact that both Stryker and Intuitive, two companies that have surgical robots, were impacted by this. And the robots weren't themselves impacted from everything we've heard, but just the fact.
Yeah, and there hasn't been, with the Intuitive thing, there hasn't been something saying it was Iran-backed, but it is interesting that you've got, now two major companies have had, cybersecurity incidents now, in just recent weeks, while this huge geopolitical situation's going on.
Yes, absolutely. So it's something we'll continue to track. And of course, cybersecurity will be an even more important conversation going forward. So,
absolutely. All right,
Chris Newmark, what's number two?
Yeah, this is some other kind of tough news. We got, Boston Scientific was the subject of a New York Times expose. We've on Mass Device, we've been covering, some serious recalls they've had around pacemaker batteries, and the New York Times kind of dived into that more, and citing company records and that they obtained and government inspection documents. They're saying that this is something that, at least the New York Times story is suggesting, this is something that Boston Scientific's been grappling with for years. I've got a story up on Mass Device, kind of summarizes it really quick, along with some reaction from the company, which, I mean, Boston Scientific's, sent a statement that they disagreed with how the positioning of the article. But, I'd say go read my summary on Mass Device. And, I have links so that you can go and read the full New York Times investigation on their site.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a terrible story laid out in the New York Times, not terrible in the quality of it, but just in what happened. Certainly would love to. I'm not sure if Boston Scientific was going to give a more full-throated defense, but it'd be interesting to understand the more of their side of the story. Not that the article
wasn't.
I thought it was fair. I mean, it obviously had a negative bent to it, as most medical device companies, medical device stories do. There seems to be more of a focus on bad things that happen. But we still, our companies and ourselves need to be accountable for that. So,
no, absolutely. And I mean, really, medtech's one of those fields when something goes wrong, it can go really, really wrong. And I mean, in these recalls so far, there have been two deaths reported. Two deaths, that's too much, And I mean, in the New York Times, they had a, I mean, they did, really explain what how a death related to something that medical device related, what the effects can be for families. So, I mean,
just tightens the focus for everyone out there working to build safer medical devices that help
absolutely.
People. So it's, there's a value in these sorts of articles, although they can be difficult to read.
Yeah.
All right, absolutely. Chris Newmarker, what's the big number one?
Well, number one on the list here, I'm going to end this off with, it's mostly positive news out of Medtronic this week. So there we go. So we don't have to be total downers here, like RAM, batteries. We've got you know, Medtronic, like the news this week. Well, I guess we'll start out with like a little bit of a downer thing, which was Medtronic cutting its guidance. You know, this was interesting. We've talked for a while about when we've mentioned the MiniMed, you know, IPO spin out. Like, what does this mean for Blackstone? Because Blackstone had a big investment in MiniMed for R&D, like back in 2000. And it turns out that now that 2020, yeah, exactly. Back then. MiniMed just got FDA clearance for the MiniMed Flex, and that's like sparked Medtronic having to it's triggering payments to Blackstone. So they had to reduce their guidance to account for that. And overall, the markets appear to have been taking that in stride. I mean, of course, we're talking on Friday, and it was a pretty rough day on the market yesterday. But Medtronic's stock is pretty much mirroring, you know, what you're seeing on the S&P 500. So it obviously seems to be something that investors were expecting.
It's baked into stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we got that news. We've got, news today, hot off the presses from Sean on Medtronic winning FDA clearance for its stealth access robot to be used in cranial and ENT procedures. It already got clearance for a spine surgery. So it's another, regulatory win for Medtronic Robotics over in, spine ortho space where it competes. And then there was also news this week of Medtronic, other partnership. I mean, we've been writing about how they've been picking up on their tucking in acquisitions, and I'm also noticing a lot more news out of Medtronic of them, inking partnerships. And this one was with Merit Medical Systems. Mm-hmm. They're going to be distributing their let me see if I can pronounce it correctly, their Via Verte system. People in Medtronic can let me know. Did I get that right? Via Verte.
I think so.
Minimally invasive, implant-free. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. It's a BVNA system. Steerable nerve targeting for treating, chronic lower back pain. So Medtronic's going to be starting to distribute that in its pain interventions portfolio. So
I would have said basi vertebral, but might be basi vertebral, but I'm sure it's people can figure it out. But yeah, great news from Medtronic. We'll have I'm going to be talking to Michael Carter of Cranial and Spine on next week for a future podcast interview. So we'll hear directly from him. I know Sean Hooley spoke with him as well earlier when they got news a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I think I'm really excited and intrigued by this just trend of, I know distro deals are nothing revolutionary, but again, as we talked about with Abbott, just the collaboration that's going on between medtech companies. I think Medtronic and Royal Philips, I think I saw an interview with the two CEOs talking about their collaboration, Philips and Medtronic in imaging. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
Heck, I mean, last week we were talking about Stryker's Kevin Lobo, their CEO, is on the board of GE Healthcare. Yep. So, I mean, it's just a lot of I'm a big fan of competition, but I mean, I also think collaboration when it makes sense. I mean, good deal. And especially when you're talking about stuff people who are making surgical systems, and then you're partnering with the imaging companies, and that's a no-brainer. I mean, to be working more closely with them to get some stuff advanced.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about it in their keynote conversation today. Folks can listen about Medtronic's in the pulse oximetry space and in the patient monitoring space, how they're opening themselves up to collaboration as well. Just as a sense, because hospitals have a finite amount of money, to try to build a platform that's going to be just focused on you and your product might not be something that they can invest in if they've already sunk some dollars into other systems. So flexibility and collaboration, I think, is a positive trend for the future of medtech. So
exactly.
All right, Chris Newmarker. I'm going to go to bed now.
And I just realized I just dawned on me, we've been talking this whole time, and we're both wearing green.
Look at us.
Look at that. Green t-shirt. I thought it was more gray, but yeah.
Oh, that's a green gray. Yeah, I noticed that when we first popped on. Yeah, normally Kayleen and I are color synced, but Now, now you and I are.
We're obviously on the same mind length.
Yeah. Tom. Well, yours looks to be a long sleeve, I think, right?
Is it? Oh, yeah. You're wearing a t-shirt. Yeah, yeah, I'm wearing a sweatshirt. Yeah. So, all right. We're all
so different. Right. Oh, my God. We're just
so different. As we sit here with gray green and reading glasses. It's fantastic. I love it.
All right. We've been doing podcasting for too long. We're starting to finish each other's sentences. So.
No, it's just. It's great. Well, Tom, it's fun as always, man.
Have a good weekend, Chris Neumarker.
Yeah, you too.
All right. Thanks, Chris Neumarker, for this week's Neumarker's Newsmakers. In addition to Device Talks Minnesota, I also hope you'll join us at Device Talks Boston. It's happening on May 27th and 28th. We've got great keynotes with Debbie Govender of Johnson & Johnson MedTech's heart recovery business, formerly known as Abiomed. We'll have Ashley McAvoy, the CEO of Insulin, another great powerhouse in the Boston medtech scene. And we'll have a panel discussion where we'll unpack the future of Massachusetts medtech, featuring many folks, including Brian Johnson of MassMedic, along with some VCs and CEOs leading the medtech space. So go to boston.devicetalks.com to register and use the code DTW25 to save 25%. Now it's time for my keynote conversation once again. My guest is Blake Tatum. He's a vice president of U.S. Commercial Acute Care and Monitoring at Medtronic. Well, Blake Tatum, welcome to the podcast.
Tom, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's going to be great to unpack the acute monitoring business at Medtronic. It's not an area we've covered a lot, so, and there's been a lot of news there lately, too. You folks are doing some super interesting things. But before we get into that, we have obviously love to learn about our guests. Blake, how did you find your way into the medtech industry?
Yeah. Different path for sure, Tom. So I actually started out of college and in more of the finance world. I worked for a firm out of Memphis, Tennessee, and had some exciting clients. Used to work with Caesars Entertainment and Northwest Airlines, and just wasn't really, something was off. Didn't seem like a human connection, didn't feel like something where you were going to make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So in my literally late 20s, talked to some friends that were with a company that I think has been gobbled up, LMA North America, that loved their career, loved going in, working cases every day. I had a neighbor in Memphis that was a trauma surgeon resident. So I shadowed him a couple of days and I was like, I'm going to make a change. I'm going to jump into Med Device. So interviewed for a while and landed actually a job with Tyco Healthcare.
Oh, wow.
As an airway management specialist. I essentially nearly probably one of the most basic med device jobs you could imagine, but it put me right into the OR. It put me right into a critical care space. You know, I'm working with physicians on trach. I'm helping anesthesia docs with airway placement. Which is its life support. So it looks low tech, but it actually was a great start because it gave me exposure to almost every, you know, high pressure area of medicine, and went from there. And it was a super rewarding change.
So you were at Tyco and then you were there while it became Covidian, et cetera. You were there through the life.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've technically been with the same company for almost 18 years, but it's been... It's been three different companies and I'd say five different career paths. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Tyco became Covidian. Covidian acquired by Medtronic. And in that time, you know, I moved out of the rep role within 3 years into a management role within the old Covidian respiratory interventions business. So we moved into like ventilation and some of the ICU capital businesses within Covidian. At one point, I was running a team of like 25 that included service techs and engineers, which was very new for me. And then about a decade ago, got combined through the Medtronic acquisition. We were combined with the patient monitoring business within Medtronic, reload here to Boulder, Colorado, and ran a combined zone of what used to be our respiratory and monitoring solutions business. In the last 5 years, I've been the U.S. Commercial Vice President for initially just the patient monitoring business. Then we recombined through some optimization work, our old respiratory business. So literally where I started 18 years prior, And then we've added our government business and a digital health franchise, which is more remote patient monitoring, some basic AI and IT integration work. So we're a little higher tech than we were when I started.
Yeah, that's definitely something I want to explore. What's your advice that you give folks for building a career within one company, finding a way up, finding up that next step, looking for those next opportunities? What's the best way to move forward?
Honestly, whether you're staying with the same company or you're changing companies, because obviously I've had a lot of people I've worked for and a lot of people that have worked for me that have moved on to other large players or, you know, taken over startups or even mid-cap companies. It's really going to be staying curious and aggressive, becoming a specialist in whatever space you're in, and making sure that you're adding value. If my exclusive experience was airway and I'm talking to a cardiac surgeon, I need to make sure that I'm networking and studying hard enough to add value to that conversation with that cardiac surgeon. So whether I jump to another large company that just does cardiac surgery or I stay here and run a patient monitoring business, you've got to be able to understand a given space within med tech and execute strategically. So it's really the same answer whether you stay or go, because I've had multiple XCOM leaders. We've had two CEO changes. So you're sort of reproving yourself whether you stay or go, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. Well, let's unpack your business. Talk a bit about acute care and monitoring. I think people think they know what it is, but as you stated, it's becoming more complex. But what are the businesses and the products that fall within the business you're working with?
Sure. So today, our core is our legacy patient monitoring business. So that's our no-core pulse oximetry franchise, our MicroStream CapNo business, our biz anesthesia monitoring, Invos regional oximetry business, and our digital health, which I mentioned earlier, which sort of brings everything together and allows it to be seen in a more useful format. We've added to that the Medtronic care management services business, which we call HealthCast Government. So it's essentially a veterans, it's exclusively focused on the VA, but it's veterans remote patient monitoring is how you should think about it. So we've got a dedicated team for government and veterans care. And then we've added the airway business from that old respiratory interventions business I mentioned earlier. So a lot of where I started is back under my leadership. So we have a dedicated airway management team again, working with those ENTs, those anesthesia docs to make sure that you've got probably the most important part of surgery, which is a secure airway so that you can breathe while you're undergoing a complex procedure.
Interesting. So this is an area within healthcare, I think, that maybe some people see as being commoditized. How does Medtronic sort of stand out and compete in this area? Where do you help people see that you're providing a difference?
Yeah. And honestly, Tom, from the outside, it looks like stickers and screens. And that, you know, when we talk to customers that are too far from it, or you talk to partners, that's how they look at it. You know, somebody in a neuromod business is like, well, you guys are selling stickers. It does stick on your finger or your forehead. But it's actually insanely high tech. So for example, in the patient monitoring space, you know, we've got our pulse oximetry business, and even, you know, even the big distributor players like Medline would say it's a commodity. But when you're on site, let's say in a neonatal intensive care unit or a burn unit or an oncology unit, we have world-class technologies in each of these sections. So for example, Nellcor pulse ox, it's something you get every time you go in. It literally touches every patient, whether you go into the ED with, you know, RSV, or you even go into your doctor's office for an annual physical, you're going to get a pulse ox reading, right? They want to know your heart rate and your blood oxygenation. However, the way that we've evolved Nellcor, there's a ton of data today that shows it is by far the most equitable pulse oximetry on the market, meaning regardless of how light or dark your skin tone is, we can give you as accurate a reading as anyone in the world, which makes a big difference. Also, if you're extremely poorly perfused, if you're extremely sick, if you're near end of life and there's not a lot of blood flow getting to your hands, we can still give you an accurate reading. So when you see it on site, it makes a huge difference. And that goes for all of our technologies. You're in a complex cardiac procedure and we have INVOS regional oximetry on you, and a physician pushes just a tiny amount of epi, you can see our tech react. It's impressive. Wow. And when people understand what a physician can do with that information, it gets a lot less commoditized.
Interesting. As you were answering that question, I was taken back to, now 5 years ago. So during the pandemic where technologies that we didn't really think much about, ventilators or, mm-hmm. or the ability to read oxygen in your blood. What was that time like for you? And do you feel like that really did, if there wasn't already an appreciation of the products that you were involved in getting into the healthcare system, do you feel like that shined a spotlight on it in a positive fashion?
Yes, absolutely. It did a couple of things. So I was actually in the ventilation space still.
Oh, wow. During okay. the
pandemic. So a lot of late night, early morning calls with governor's offices and even federal leadership, names that you would recognize would literally hit you on your cell phone and you would have to explain what the timing is on ventilation deliveries. It was a very interesting time. But for our core businesses, it sort of renewed like a knowledge base and an interest in what we do. And really through no effort of our own, it generated a lot of independent data on our pulse oximetry, on some of our light sensing technologies. Uh-huh. And it showed a significant difference in how they perform. A medical grade pulse oximeter versus what you would get at a Walgreens or a CVS. And there's a strong amount of just independent data out of big U.S. facilities that show there is a big difference in how these light sensing technologies operate, how different algorithms operate. And it's really created a renewed interest in making sure that a patient gets the best possible care, whether it's a sticker with lights on it or it's a cardiac stent. So it's really been a benefit for us. It renewed interest. It helped clarify where we needed to go with a lot of our technologies as far as integration and partnerships. And it's allowed us to sort of reinvent this business over the last 4 years, to be honest with you.
I want to unpack that reinvention in a moment. But another thing that came to be known at the time or just before the pandemic was, and you referenced this earlier, the ability of monitors or sensors like yours to read different skin tones accurately. Was that something that was you were capable of performing before, or were improvements made since 2020 when I became aware? I don't want to speak for everyone else. I became more aware of some of the shortfalls of medical technology.
Yeah, it's funny. Our R&D leader, Jason Case, before AI became a buzzword, we always called it machine learning. Mm-hmm. So we actually iterated a lot of our core patient monitoring technologies, BIS, INVOS, NELCORE, MitraStream. We had iterated multiple times over the years leading up to the pandemic and obviously after. So We built it towards a sensor and algorithm, and it learns over time. The more patients you see, the more it's able to learn and adjust. And we didn't call it AI. I remember pre-pandemic, we would present to, say, a children's hospital and explain, listen, this is a machine learning, enabled algorithm. We learn as we go. This thing iterates. We've iterated it every year for the last decade. And we knew we were good, right? Like you can do an on-patient eval and you can put these technologies on an ICU patient or someone in the OR and you can see, like, it'll quickly give you a reading. It'll lock onto a heart rate. We're cardiac based in the pulse oximetry space. And you can see signal quality, like in an OEM monitor, and we could see high signal quality. We could lock in within a few seconds and we felt good about it, but we didn't understand what it meant, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But the pandemic and the light that was shown on health equity, and like I said, a lot of the independent studies that were generated, it opened our eyes. We didn't realize what a big difference it was. We didn't realize what the impact on someone, you know, at the far end of the skin pigmentation scale, how big a difference it could be. Mm-hmm. So it showed us, you know, I won't go through all the data, but it did show us as significantly different. It also showed us a pathway to innovation. So since the pandemic, we've released a new OxySoft sensor with even brighter LED technology that can pick up even faster on a baby or an adult. And then we've got a new release coming in this coming fiscal year that's going to be an even higher level above that. So it showed how good we were at the time, but it also showed us a pathway to make it almost a non-issue. You know, where your skin tone and your blood perfusion are not going to matter. We're going to be able to show a nearly, you know, completely accurate reading every time. So it had a dual effect.
Interesting. I kind of like machine learning as a term better than AI. I wish we were still using
it. Yeah, it just felt more genuine, you know?
Yeah,
It felt more accurate.
And a little less intimidating. So that was then. Well, let's drill a bit into the structural changes of the organization that you're in. You mentioned some of the businesses that were brought in. Kate Benedict came as a senior vice president last year, the middle of last year. What was the thought behind the reorg? What does it allow you to do that you weren't able to do before?
Yeah, it's just a more complete offering to the market. So when you go in, you know, to an ED, to an OR, now we essentially can be involved in the pre-op work with a patient with some of our wearable technologies. We can be involved directly in the pre-op assessment. So you've got, you know, a BIS anesthesia monitoring sensor on, you've got a pulse ox, you've got Envos regional oximetry. We can show you organ health, the depth of the anesthesia. We can show you is there blood oxygenation and heart rate in a healthy place. And we can combine all of that into a view that a physician can use to understand, you know, is the procedure or the therapy I'm applying to this patient, is it effective? Have I made a mistake? Do we need a different intervention in this space? Whether it's, you know, a chronically ill patient that's been in ICU for 2 weeks or somebody that's undergoing a cardiac procedure. It allows us to bring all of the, you know, airway management, patient monitoring, and digital health technologies in together to allow them to get a clear picture from pre-op to going home of how healthy or not healthy or how effective or not effective a given intervention is. Mm-hmm. So that you can make decisions faster and you can make accurate and informed decisions faster. So it just the combining of all these technologies has allowed us to just get a clearer picture of how we can affect almost every single patient that walks into a hospital or even a post-acute center or an ASC and make sure that we optimize either that procedure or that care pathway with fair certainty.
So sure. Great explanation of how things have changed structurally corporate-wise. Talk a bit about the technology. You mentioned digital health a couple of times. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm fortunately, I'm a fairly healthy individual. I go and I get the reading of my oxygen at my doctor's office. I don't have to carry it with me. I don't have to track it every day. What are the digital health components? Who do they help? Where do they fit? And what additional functionality are they providing?
Yeah, we're very partnership and integration focused. So what it means to us, the key really to all of medtech and healthcare right now is how do you get the most high fidelity data off of a given person? So how do I get the highest fidelity information off of Tom, use that information to create a treatment pathway for whatever issue you may or may not be having, and then get you home safely so that you heal in as safe and comforting environment as you possibly can. So for us, digital health is we're taking each of our world-class technologies, right? So we've got some of the highest fidelity sensing technology in the world. We can take each of those data points and we can aggregate them. So for us, our VitalSync platform, or even some of our EMR Connect work, what we're doing is we're taking each of these separate data points, each of these separate sensing technologies, and we're pulling them together in a single view. So in a hospital, mm-hmm. we can take your, you know, pulse oximetry, your capnography, essentially your CO2 and respirate data, And we can aggregate all of that with, say, ventilator settings, and we can display it so that a nurse or a physician can see in this unit, you know, I've got healthy patients in rooms 1 through 5. Tom in room 6 seems to be struggling. You know, his pulse ox has dropped. His respiration rate has dropped. I think Tom's in trouble. Mm-hmm. So we can take all of these separate things that a nurse or a physician would have to look at and try to make a judgment call, and we can aggregate them into, you know, this person is trending great or this person is trending risky, and we need to mm-hmm. take a closer look at that person. Just trying to make all of the sensors and the beeps and the things that you see in an OR or an ICU unit or even a med-surg floor and make them usable is our whole point. Beyond that, you know, like I mentioned, we're bringing in wearable technologies with a lot of our tech. We need a way, say you have a procedure, you go home, we need a sensor on you that can show your current status to that hospital or to your general practitioner or whatever physician is tracking your care. So for us, it's really taking all of these things that watch you in the moment, aggregating them and putting them in a place that a caregiver needs to see to make a good decision on your care.
So are the targets or are these devices, or the digital health tools, are they mostly clinician facing, not patient facing, consumer facing? They're not something I'm going to be keeping an eye on myself.
No. Yep. We have that option, right? Like if a physician is like, I need Tom to be able to see his current stats, we can do that. But today what we're building is clinician facing. Yes.
Okay.
We want the information and the decision making to be as fast and accurate as possible.
I don't need to track my oxygen levels every right. second. We got enough right. going
or,
on.
Or, yeah. or what that means, you know, or am I okay or not? Or if, you know, you get up from the couch too fast, you don't want to have a panic attack and suddenly everything changed. So yeah, there's pluses and minuses to home care.
Absolutely. Let's talk a bit about you mentioned partnerships. I'm not sure if these are the partnerships you were referring to, but over the past few weeks or months, we've seen that you've had a partnership with Philips, with Mindray. The week we're recording this, you just announced a partnership with GE Healthcare. What are these? It's unusual to see medical devices partner up. We're seeing more and more of it. But three in a span of months is as we say in the news business, a trend. So talk about this trend of partnership for Medtronic, and what does it provide for you and for patients and for customers?
Absolutely, and it is a deliberate action on our part. So a lot of players in this space they want to own an ecosystem, right? So they want all of their capital equipment and screens installed. They want all of their sensors talking to those screens. They want to sort of own the entire ecosystem, right? Like they want everything in a room to be one brand. And that is an approach that's been used for years, and a lot of the players in the space use it. Sort of, you know, going back to what we learned through the pandemic, what we realized was that our sensors and algorithms were world-class. And how do we take that technology and make it fit? So, you know, I can approach a hospital and I can demand, I need you to rip all of this out, replace it with all of my equipment. And then what I'm going to be able to give you is amazing, right? Like everything, I'll be able to control the signal. I'll be able to control the data that comes off that box. But that's a very heavy lift and a very heavy cost burden for that facility. What we've done is we've taken a deliberate step to make sure that we have the right partners and the right integration ability to be able to place this technology anywhere. Mm-hmm. So what you've seen in the GE announcement and the Mindray announcement and the Philips announcement, those are our OEM players. Those are patient monitoring players that own significant market share globally. So, you know, if we can partner with a GE and cover, you know, almost every government facility and, you know, a high percentage of acute care hospitals and integrate our technology, our boards and cables and sensors with GE. Mm-hmm. Now I can approach said hospital that's already got GE equipment and say, hey, I can install our technology into your existing infrastructure and I can enhance it with the digital health overlay. Mm-hmm. So the way our R&D leader likes to explain it is we like to be light touch but extremely effective. I'm not looking to rip and replace everything in your hospital. What I'm looking to do is upgrade your existing technology so you've got the best possible sensing tech and the best possible sensors and algorithms within your hospital. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these partnerships are about making sure that we've got all of our best possible technologies integrated and connected, so that it's not a 5-year project to rip and replace everything in that hospital. We can literally do it in days. Mm. And upgrade, obviously, the workflow for that hospital so that the clinicians and physicians are happier, and also the patient care. So everything we do is to make the job of that physician and clinician easier and more effective, and to make sure that, you know, when your grandma or your mother or your son and daughter are going into the hospital, you can feel extremely confident that what that physician is seeing is accurate, coming off of that patient.
That makes sense. I'm an Apple Watch guy, and if I'm buying a device to track my whatever, I want to make sure if it's compatible with my Apple Watch and I can just flick a switch and suddenly they're talking to each other, that's fantastic. Like, it's a big win for me.
You want it agnostic.
What goes into that partnership in terms of that creating that interaction? Is it just as much just writing some code on your end that plugs into the code that's written on their end? Is that where it goes, or is it much deeper than that?
Yeah, it is a little deeper. So we will manufacture the processing boards, the cables, the chips. We will manufacture everything that goes into our system. Mm-hmm. So then our integration team, our ops and R&D teams will work with that partner, to make sure that we can safely, integrate into their real estate. So is it going to fit literally? Is the Lego going to fit into the existing monitor? but also we partner with them to do all of the V&D work to make sure that it can be integrated seamlessly, effectively, that it's going to work every single time. So there's actually a lot of development work that goes into these partnerships where, you know, we have a financial agreement, we have a contract, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the most important part is, have we built a solution that can integrate into that, you know, whatever platform it is safely? And can my team go in and upgrade it quickly so that we don't shut down a room for 2 days just to do a board replacement? So it needs to be quick, effective, and more importantly, safe and accurate. So there's a lot of, you know, behind the scenes work that goes into these partnerships before we ever announce an agreement, to make sure that we can do what we say we do in that agreement.
Interesting. Looking forward, you mentioned ASCs earlier on, ambulatory mm-hmm. surgery centers. A big part of the future of all medical device companies. It's where a lot of care is going to be delivered.
Yeah.
What is that? Does that present any different setting for you, challenge for you? Do devices need to be smaller? Do they need to be this or that or the other thing? What sort of opportunity and challenges do ASCs present?
Yeah, it's a market reality now. So last year, a third of cardiac procedures moved to ASC. CMS is expanding covered procedures by over 500 codes. So the market is moving that way. What it means to us, beyond just, you know, business realities, is that what you're doing is you're moving a lot of higher acuity and higher risk procedures that used to be exclusively done in the hospital. You're moving them to that ambulatory surgery space. Mm-hmm. So that opens sort of an obligation and an opportunity for us. So if we're going to do, you know, complex cardiac or ortho procedures in an ASC, they need to have our technology to make sure that that procedure is being done safely, accurately, and as quickly as possible, so that you can safely execute on that cardiac or ortho procedure. You know, they can get home same day or close to same day. So it's really opened an opportunity for us. For example, the Midra announcement you mentioned, that was an ASC partnership. They own mm-hmm. they own a large percentage of that space. We need to make sure we understand how they operate, that we've got very, very strong integration into their platform, so that when an ASC upgrades or opens, we essentially can just seamlessly install each of these higher end technologies, so that when you go in to an ASC for a knee replacement or whatever it is, you've automatically got a hospital grade no core pulse oximeter. You've already got hospital grade biz to make sure that they titrate your anesthesia as closely as they possibly can. And you don't have, you know, post-op delirium. You've already got the hospital grade monitoring in the ASC space. So that's why we're executing some of these partnerships, and really what our strategy is to make it easier for the ASC to acquire the technology and easier for that tech to go onto that patient.
How unusual, it's unusual. It's been unusual to have medical device companies collaborate like that, I think. Does it feel different? Well, does it just feel now? I mean, it makes perfect sense, and I think it's a real positive for the industry. But has it been unusual for you or different?
It's been a five-year process, I'll say that. So we've always had a lot of our core tech integrated into a lot of these platforms.
Okay.
Let's say 80% of our sensor burn or 80% or more has gone through one of the large OEMs over the last, number of years. But really, we've taken a much more deliberate approach the last 4 to 5 years with my organization in the U.S. I've got dedicated OEM account management heads. I've got dedicated professional service, like service engineer heads. That coordinate, we do walkthroughs, we've learned how to scope the needs accurately to make sure it's cost effective. And like I mentioned, workflow optimized within a given hospital or ASC. So we've deliberately built to where we are today with just expertise. And then the partnership is what comes at the end. Once we can clearly show the value prop, we can clearly show that we can enhance the business of, say, a GE or a Philips or a Mindray or a Neon Coden. Once we can show that value to the customer, mm-hmm. but and the physician and clinician, but also to that company, it gets a lot easier because we've sort of already built the bones. Mm-hmm. It is unusual. Like I said, a lot of the players in this space, they want to own the entire space.
Yeah.
And we made the decision that we wanted to fit. We want our algorithms and our technologies and sensors on as many patients as we possibly could. So initially there was some skepticism, like, what are you guys really doing here? What are we, uh-huh. Are you just trying to take over this space? Are you going to, bait and switch with a big capital offering later? But over, now that it's been 4 or 5 years of a deliberate effort here, we've got a really close partnership in a lot of these spaces to where they understand what we're doing. We understand what their goals are. And like I said, we can fit into existing infrastructure and bring the right technology and sensor to the patient, regardless of what's built into that facility. So it's been a process, I'd say.
Really interesting. Final question. Give us a sense of where things are headed and what growth looks like. I mean, are you moving into areas that we're not really, that those of us outside aren't really seeing yet? Do you see the types of offerings you have changing a lot as AI and or machine learning become more common? Yeah. What's coming up?
Yeah, we're leaning in. Leaning in to the higher tech space. So I mentioned earlier, we've got new boards and algorithms and sensors coming out in the next year to 2 years on every technology that we've discussed. We're even innovating in the airway space. We're releasing new video laryngoscopes and trachs in the next 12 months. So we're innovating across the board as far as what the core tech does, how it operates, how easy it is to use, how fast you can see a signal or a diagnostic, alert. A lot of that is happening to our core technologies. Where we're also leaning in that's newer. You mentioned your Apple Watch and other sensors. That's consumer grade tech, right? So your Oura Ring, your Apple Watch, whatever it is, it'll tell you, your heart rate's too high or you didn't sleep well, and those are all very effective. What we're looking to do is bring medical grade technology to a subset of those patients. Mm-hmm. So you can't have a heart valve replacement and go home and have your Apple Watch watch that, right? If we can get a medical grade sensor on you that we can use digital health to keep that information consistently going back to either your cardiologist or that hospital to keep you quote unquote tethered to that hospital where you don't have to sit in an ICU, you can actually be home and feel confident that you've got a medical grade sensor showing that physician how you're doing. We can execute on what the market calls hospital to home or hospital at home. where we can bring medical grade sensing technology to your house so that you can heal and recover at home. But if something goes wrong, that hospital can see it and get you in and get that treatment executed. So we're taking what we do really well, which is sensors, algorithms, and digital health placement of that technology. And we're looking to bring that to home. A lot of what we do at the VA, a lot of the monitoring we do at the VA today, that's all veterans at home. It's chronically ill veterans at home. So we know how it works well. Now we're using a lot of the AI tools, a lot of the digital health, remote patient monitoring that we already do well in the hospital today, and then upgraded sensors and algorithms to take what we do well in the hospital and allow it to follow Tom to his house while he's recovering. So that's a lot of our future. We're still super focused in the acute space. We're still early stage in a lot of the partnerships that you and I discussed earlier, where we can make things faster and easier, and we can improve those workflows. We can improve a lot of the overstretched staffing issues we have in U.S. healthcare. So we're going to stay focused in acute. We're also going to use a lot of the new technologies and AI or machine learning to take what we do well in acute and get it post-acute.
All right. Well, this has been a great look into the acute monitoring space. Blake Tatum, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, Tom, enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the discussion.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Once again, I hope you'll join us at Device Talks Minnesota on May 4th, at Device Talks Boston on May 27th and 28th, and of course on Device Talks Tuesday, this coming Tuesday at 4 p.m. I also hope you'll subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode of our great podcast. And of course, connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with Chris Newmarker, and connect with Managing Editor Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn as well. And I hope you'll follow Mass Device and Device Talks on LinkedIn so you don't miss our future discussions about our great medtech industry. All right, folks, thanks again for being part of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.